This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today is Leisha Banks, who's the director of the YWCA of the University of Illinois, and we're going to be talking about eliminating racism and empowering women, the two goals of the YWCA. Welcome, Leisha.
Thank you.
Now, these are the goals for the whole, all the YWCAs in the whole country, right?
Yes.
And how are they chosen?
Well, the original goal of empowering women, I think, was established quite some time ago. The whole mission of the YWCA is, just go ahead and read that. The Young Women's Christian Association of the United States of America is a woman's movement nourished by its roots in the Christian faith and sustained by the richness of many beliefs and values. Strengthened by diversity, the association draws together members who strive to create opportunities for women's growth, leadership, and power in order to attain a common vision: peace, justice, freedom, and dignity for all people. And then this part of the goal was added in, I believe, in the 1970s. The association will thrust its collective power towards the elimination of racism wherever it exists and by any means necessary. And that was in response to the civil rights movement and the idea that women faced maybe a double type of discrimination,
sure.
So sexism and racism, and so the goal is to eliminate both.
And when I first learned about racism sort of as a subject, I remember about the first thing that I was taught was that in this country, white people have power and privilege whether they want it or not. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of part of the social fabric. And for people of color, That's one of the barriers. It simply exists.
Yes. Yeah, and I think that that was something that the women in the YWCA realized early on, that they did have privileges that women of color did not share and could not share in the broader society. And so in many areas, the YWCA was first or really instrumental in integrating and involving African American women in this country in equal footing with the white women who were the leaders in part of the YWCA.
Now, I know that you've recently, here in Champaign County, had one of your annual Black Women's Achievement Dinner, where you've honored Black women of
yes.
worthy of distinction. tell
yes.
us about that dinner and who was honored this year.
Okay. This year, well, I'll tell you a little bit about the dinner first, because this year we honored the founder, basically, of the Black Women's Achievement Dinner here in Champaign-Urbana, Jen Osler, who is a former executive director of the YWCA.
And now a teacher.
Yes, mm-hmm. in Unit 4.
Yes.
Jen started the Black Women's Achievement Dinner 20 years ago with the idea that wanted to do something for Black History Month that wasn't necessarily academic-oriented. She put it sitting around talking, having panel discussions. So she thought that, you know, it would be a good idea during Black History Month to recognize some of the achievements of African-American women. And at first, they had a pretty diverse group from all over the country, if I'm not mistaken, yeah, of African-American women who came for that first dinner, and it was pretty successful, so they continue with it. So this year was our 20th anniversary, and so we thought it was it was very fortuitous that our 20th anniversary coincided with Dr. Zalima Harris's retirement from Parkland College, so we wanted to honor her. And so we gave her our Lifetime Achievement Award. We have normally during Black Women's Achievement, three categories of awards: trailblazer, unsung hero for women who wouldn't necessarily have been recognized but have contributed a lot to the community or the campus. Hmm. And then we have our Young Achiever Awards for high school or college students. So this year, Grace Mitchell was our trailblazer. Polly Washington and Doris Batts were our unsung achievers, and our, my goodness, I'm going to have to remember our young achievers, all three of them.
Were they high school or college students?
Two of them were high school, and one young lady is at Parkland now.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Now, where do you hold these dinners?
This year, our dinner was at the Round Barn. We're usually at one of the banquet facilities around town.
Hotel.
Yeah.
And how many people came this year?
We had close to 200 this
Wonderful.
Year. Yeah, we had a really good turnout.
Great. And I'm sure Jen Osler was pleased to be honored since it was her idea back 20 years ago.
Yes, she was. She was surprised when we first told her that we wanted to do that, but she was very pleased, and her children were very proud of her.
I'm sure. And she has how many children?
Five children, yes. All right. They're all teenagers, too.
Five teenagers, think of that, and teaching all day.
What a job.
That's right. Now, you're really following as executive director of the YWCA here in Champaign-Urbana in a distinguished history. There have been a number of excellent directors. You mentioned Jen Osler. Who else has there been?
Naomi Jacobson, as a matter of fact. I came right after Naomi.
Who's gone on to be a state representative.
Who is our state representative. Mm-hmm. Yes, she is. And I think before Naomi, and Jen served twice as executive director, but Amy Smith Stowe was the director in the early 90s, I believe.
Where is she now?
Amy's in Florida.
Oh.
Yeah, but we stay in touch.
Very good. Tell us a little bit about the YWCA nationally. How many do you call them, chapters? How many
associations
mm-hmm. are there?
Let's see. There are quite a few associations across the United States. There are 300, as a matter of fact, associations throughout the United States.
Is the one here at the university unusual in that it's connected to a university as well as to a community?
Yes, it is. Now, there were quite a few university-based YWCAs in the early part of the 20th century, but they kind of, I think, during that time of student activism and such, there were quite a few. But then right now there are only six student-affiliated YWCAs left in the United States. Yeah, so we're the oldest continuously operating student YWCA in the United States.
When were you founded?
We were founded in 1884 here on the U of I campus.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith today with Leisha Banks, who is the executive director of the YWCA of the University of Illinois and the community. This is a live call-in program every Sunday afternoon here on AM 580. And if listeners would like to join the conversation, share perhaps one of their memories of experiences at the YWCA over the many years that it's been in this community, or ask a question to our guest, do give us a call. If you're in Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL, the call letters of the station, of course. If you're listening anywhere outside Champaign-Urbana, you may call us on long-distance, cell phone, whatever, at an 800 number that's toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. So if you're listening on the Internet or outside Champaign-Urbana, do use the 800 number. That's 222-9455. Again, in Champaign, it's 333-9455. And I see we have a caller already. Let's go to one of the local lines. This is line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Yes. I call in often. Anyway, I'm very proud of anything the YWCA does. My question to you is, I'm against isms of any kind. How do you stand on the isms? That's fanatic in my mind.
So things like racism and
yes.
sexism, and what others would you include in that?
Oh, any ism is fanatic, yes.
Well, that's a lot of things there, and the YWCA is, of course, as I said, in our mission against racism and for the elimination of racism and the empowerment of women. And I think a lot of the negative isms can be, if we don't focus on those so much as the positive things that we can do to live together and to be able to respect one another, I think that a lot of those negative isms will be maybe not eliminated, but certainly not in the forefront. And that's what we try to do with the YW. We try to encourage our students to work with one another, to work with different groups on campus as a way of dispelling some of those isms. I think a lot of isms arise out of ignorance. And so just working with other people, getting to know other people, establishing relationships with them, it goes a long way to eliminate some of those.
That's a good answer. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. Do you, when you engage in education, you do it not only on the university campus, though, but you're also involved in the community as well?
Yes. Yes, we are.
Can you give me some examples of things in the past that have been sort of crossed those boundaries mm-hmm. between campus and community?
Well, just recently, a week ago, Saturday, we had our Black History Bowl, our first annual Black History Bowl, where it was a competition between students, middle school and high school students. They competed on grade level, and it was a lot of fun. It was very exciting, and those are the kinds of things that I think go a long way to help people understand one another and combat those isms. The YW has a very long history of involving itself in dialogue between campus and the community, and fostering dialogue between groups that maybe wouldn't do that on their own. Mm. That goes a long way towards understanding. The YW was one of the first organizations on campus, as a matter of fact, that had actual formal groups that came together to discuss the problem of race and racism in Champaign-Urbana as early as the 1930s.
Interesting. When the YWCA became concerned with racism, was it largely a white institution?
Yes, yes. And there were black members of the YWCA, but I guess people are a product of their time and you know, the society that they live in. And so there was still a lot of segregation in the YWCAs, depending on where they were, what part of the country they were. But still, even probably in places that you wouldn't normally think that there would be. But I think the idea of empowering people and women coming together and trying to help each other caused them to see some of the, hypocritical things in the society and in their own worldview that caused them to say, well, you know, maybe if we say that we're for empowering women and we're Christians and we believe this, then, you know, maybe we shouldn't be doing this. Maybe we should be doing something else. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's where a lot of that kind of self-examination and willingness to put aside what might be the societal norms came about.
We have a couple other callers waiting. Let's go to line number one. Go ahead, please.
Yes, hello, Steve. I wonder if the YW has made any comment on the John Foreman article that appeared in their paper recently about Islam.
I'm not familiar with the commentary.
Well, he made a rather bigoted and intense argument that Islam was, by its very nature, a faith of hatred, and I just found it an outrageous article, and wondered if the Y has had a chance to say anything about that.
Well, I did happen to notice it myself, and had a negative reaction, but I wrote to the paper personally and responded to that.
I didn't read the article, but it's interesting. At one of the YW conferences that I went to in the last year or so, the World YWCA has a conference every, I think it's every 3 years, every 2 or 3 years, and the last one was in Australia, and so some of the women who are from YWCAs in Illinois, we also have a state group. At one of our meetings, they talked about the tension in the World YWCA between the Palestinian women who are part of the World YWCA and the Israeli representatives, and how the conflicts all over the world are, you know, right here, right in our group, and how we're actually working to overcome those, that those women actually are a part, can be a part of a forum where they can actually talk to each other. So, again, I guess that would go back to, you know, people being able to come together, I think, and work some of those problems out with people that they can see face to face. It's easier or harder to hate that person that's sitting right across from you than this nebulous they out there.
And we have another caller waiting on line number two on the local line. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Thank you. I'm very interested in how the YW perceives of the concepts of empowerment and how the organization sees themselves doing this and what empowerment of women means to them. Can you speak a little bit on that?
Sure. Recently, as a matter of fact, the YWCA of the USA has been kind of examining that issue, and a lot of what came out of that conversation is that women in this particular society need to be empowered economically. And that is what the YWCA's focus should be. Now, when I say economically, we're not talking about so much encouraging women to be in business or take that type of approach, but just that we should be more responsible in those areas, and that it's not just a matter of providing a service to someone who's at a disadvantage at that particular time in their life or something like that, but actually helping women to be independent, and so that maybe they wouldn't need those kinds of services. So that's what we mean by empowerment, empowering women to be responsible and to take up their rightful positions in this society.
Now, who were some of the people who helped you, Leisha, as you were growing up in this society as an African-American woman, who helped you gain your own sense of worth and dignity and ability to do anything you set out to do? Who were some of the important people in your own life?
Wow. That's a very interesting question. A lot of I've just really been blessed in that I've come in contact with a lot of people who were very supportive of me, my parents. It's funny because when you said that, while you were saying that, the person that came to my mind was my husband.
Really?
I don't know why people would think that's kind of weird, but really, because we were pretty young. We were pretty young when we got married. And
where did you grow up?
I grew up in Philadelphia.
Where did you meet your husband?
I met him here at the University of Illinois. I came here as a student as one of the original 500 project students. And
what year was that?
That was 1968.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And
where had Nathaniel come from?
He lived in Champaign all his life.
Okay.
His family is pretty well established here, and so I met him, and we were married, and like I said, we were pretty young. So really, the people that a lot of reading, I read a lot, but and at that particular time, I mean, there was just so much going on in all areas. The women's movement was happening, the civil rights movement, and there were just so many voices and so many people of prominence with such encouraging things to say that I just tried to take it all in as much as I could. So I would have to say that he's really been a really big influence on me.
Now, did you come from a particular religious family?
No. No. When we were young, my parents always made sure that we went to church, the children. Got us out there on Sunday, made us go to church and everything.
This was a Christian church?
Yes. Yeah.
What denomination?
They weren't necessarily religious themselves. Baptists mostly, but also some Methodists who had a church in our neighborhood but had moved out to the suburbs when had set up a small Bible school that they called it, right across the street from where I grew up, as a matter of fact. So we would go there and have a little service, sing songs and study the Bible and that kind of stuff. So I've always been exposed to it.
And was that Christian background of help in terms of your own development ethically and morally and being committed like to the civil rights movement, or what did that get in the way? Was it a bad example as it is for some people?
No, I think it was really pretty instrumental. You know, when you're young and especially at that time, I mean, there was just when the anti-war movement was going on, the civil rights movement, the women's movement, like I said, all those things were going on at that time, and so you're pulled in a lot of different directions. But I think the grounding that faith can give, that being a Christian has given me, and that was something that came along, you know, later on as I became an adult.
After college?
Yeah. Yeah, it was what was, I think, I able to be a good foundation that I could build on.
Now, you and your husband have children?
Yes, we do. We have three sons. They're all over the place right now. One's in Boston, my youngest one's here, and my oldest son is in Texas, in Austin, Texas, so We're pretty spread out, and my nephew lives with us too. And right now, he's a senior at Central.
Ah,
yeah.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon with Leisha Banks, who is the director of the YWCA of the University of Illinois, that was founded in 1884 on this campus, and whose major mission is to empower women and to eliminate racism. We'll be talking some more about those goals and some of the methods used by the YWCA. We have another caller on line number one. Let's talk with this person. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith.
I called before. I wonder if the choices of YW is to mope or cope. It sounds to me, from listening to you, that your choice is to cope. Is that true?
trying to cope with dealing with different problems in society and helping women to do that.
Okay. Well, we don't see it as coping. I think our work with young women is one of mentoring them and trying to give them the tools that they'll need to be successful, to be and when I say successful, I don't mean CEO of some company or something like that. Although, hey, I think that's great if your young women get out there and do that at whatever they want to do, whatever they see themselves doing in life. I think that's up to them. But what we're, I think, doing at the YW is giving them the tools to do whatever it is that they want to do, but also training them to be activists so that they know that they can make a difference in this world, that they can change things. So that's where I see our job. That's where I see us as being most effective. You can't do everything. You know, it's a question of doing what you can do and doing it as well as you can.
Yes. Well, I agree with that. This is a choice. You can either mope or cope. Yes. And
yes.
It sounds to me like your decision is to cope.
Well, I think that's a personal decision.
Mm-hmm.
If you decide to, you can do something in particular or that you can make a change and you have the tools to do that, then you'll go ahead and do that. But then there are those who think or feel that their contribution is what you might call moping. I think that's a personal decision. But everybody, we can give all the young women who come to the YWCA the tools to do whatever they think is necessary in their lives.
Yes, I wanted to come to your dinner tonight, but I couldn't. But
I'm
anyway,
sorry.
I'm very grateful for you being on the air, Lisa, and all power to you. It's a choice, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And we have another caller waiting. Let me give the phone numbers for others who'd like to join the conversation. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL, the call letters of the station here at AM 580. Elsewhere, a toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to line number two. You're on the air.
Yes, I have not been in this community near as long as you. And I wonder if you could tell me how you've seen the community change over time with regard to racism. I'll go ahead and hang up and listen to your response.
Changes since 1968 when you came here. It's been quite a few decades.
And there's been quite a bit of change. When I did in 1968, and as a student on campus, I didn't really see a lot of the kinds of overt racism that and really segregationist type situations and policies that were in place. I was told by a lot of people. Marrying someone right from Champaign, and so having a lot of relatives here, I've heard a lot of stories about a lot of the things that went on here in Champaign-Urbana. I do know that that African American students were not allowed to live on campus for long periods of time, or until I guess even this early 60s or so. But the YWCA was one of the first, as a matter of fact, integrated residences on the U of I campus.
Hmm.
And that was in the late 50s, early 60s, I believe, probably early 60s when that happened. So there has been change, but as with a lot of things, those types of behaviors are overt types of behaviors are frowned upon. So it's more subtle. It's more just less overt, and those types of things are not done anymore. You know, nobody tells black people that you can't come over here, you can't live on this in this building on campus anymore or anything like that. But attitudes still exist, and which are the hardest things to change. But I think that people, if you make a concerted effort to deal with people on an individual basis, that it goes a long way.
We have another caller, again on line number one. Go ahead, please.
Hi.
Hello.
Yes. A while ago, maybe about 6 years ago, the YWCA was sponsoring study circles and an opportunity for persons to group in small groups to discuss diversity.
Mm-hmm.
Is that still in effect?
Well, no, we haven't been able to get that going. It takes a lot of manpower, and
we're a
very small office right now. We only have 2 full-time staff people, so so it was kind of a little difficult for us to handle that program. But I understand that when it was going on, that it was a very successful program. And I think, too, that our focus, because we are such a small office at this point, has just kind of shifted inward to more of what we can do working with the students on campus.
Oh, okay. And rather than the whole community, emphasis.
But we will be doing more in the future that will bring more interaction with the community and the students, because that's part of our goal, part of our focus.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Alicia, tell us quickly how people who would like to be supportive of the YWCA and its mission in terms of empowering women and eliminating racism, how may people contribute? Do you need volunteers? Do you need money? Probably
yes.
For sure the latter.
All of the above.
Okay.
Yeah, we do. And you can contribute to the YWCA. You can. We are a nonprofit, which, you know, a 501c3, so your donation would be tax deductible. And you can send that directly to the YWCA at 1001 South Wright Street in Champaign.
And that Wright Street is WRIGHT.
Yes, mm-hmm. That Wright.
Uh-huh.
And
61820.
Yes.
And if people want to ask you questions, follow up on any of these things privately, might they call the
yes.
YW?
Yes, our number is 344-0721. And I think that in terms of supporting the YWCA, being a member is a way to support the YWCA. Our basic membership is $35, and it goes a long way towards helping us to provide the types of programming that we've been talking about with the students and with the community, involving all aspects.
We'll be talking a little bit more with Alicia Banks after this short break. Let me remind listeners, this is Keeping the Faith. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for the program on Sunday evenings from 5 to 6 here on WILL AM 580. A listener-supported radio service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois. Our phone numbers in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, elsewhere 1-800-222-9455. Next week on Keeping the Faith, we'll be talking with Hassan Jabbar about the life of the Prophet Muhammad. There's been a lot of discussion recently about Islam and the Prophet, and we'll be having a guest on next week, that's March 12, discussing his life. On March 19, our guest is Reverend John Setterland of St. Andrew's Lutheran Church and the Lutheran Campus Center at the University of Illinois, who's recently returned from another of his several trips to the Holy Land, and he'll be talking about the situation in Palestine and Israel. The topic will be a divided Holy Land. That will be on March 19. On March 26, we'll be talking with Esther Portnoy and others about the crop walk of Church World Service. In April, we have some interesting discussions, some visitors to campus from the program in the study of religion. We'll be talking about the Bible in the public schools. And also, we'll be talking with two poets, Judith Valente and Charles Renard, and their recent book, 20 Poems to Nourish Your Soul. Those are programs coming up here on Keeping the Faith in April. Support for these programs is provided by the University YMCA at the University of Illinois, where I'm the executive director. The YMCA is focused on providing opportunities for developing student leadership by providing opportunities for social action and community service. One of the Y programs coming up, March 12, is our international dinner. People who've been to that in the past know it's always packed, sold out. There's still a few tickets available. If you'd like to come to that Sunday evening, March 12, at 6 o'clock, tickets are $8 at the YMCA. Call us at 337-1500 or stop by 1001 South Wright, where we share space with the YWCA. Coming up this week on Tuesday noon at the Y, Leon Dash will be speaking. That's March 7, this coming Tuesday. He'll be talking about adding to history. Leon Dash's collection has been given to the U of I Library Archives, and one of the university archivists, Chris Prom, will be there talking about this important addition to the wonderful library at the university, and Professor Dash will be there to talk about why he made this choice and what some of those interesting materials from his long-time days as a prize-winning reporter will include. And then this Friday, at Friday Forum, also a free lecture, Bob McChesney, professor at the Institute of Communications Research at the university, will be talking about transparency of the media. Those of you who enjoy Bob McChesney's show here on WILL might enjoy the chance to meet him personally, hear him speak, ask him questions. That's March 10, Friday at the Y at noon. Both lectures are free. If you'd like to come and have lunch, do give us a call and make a reservation for lunch. Good Thai food from the Y Eatery. Call 337-1500. I want to thank our listener who's been waiting on the phone for their patience. You're on the air with our guest, Alicia Banks. Go ahead, please.
Hello.
Yes.
Calling in to say it's very fine indeed to have the YM and the YW both talking to each other on the air. It's you share the building, and sometimes our YW two-person office gets a little bit in the shade, and the News Gazette writes that it's a YM connection and this kind of thing. So I appreciate the opportunity to call in. I'm a former YW board member, and sorry that I didn't hear from the beginning. I was on another call, and I wonder if Leisha would tell us a bit about who the board members are now and what kinds of interests and skills they bring, or is that something you've already covered?
We've not covered that. That's a very,
very good
question. Thank you for raising that.
Well, thank you very much. I'll listen with interest, and I'll hang up. Thank you.
So you have a board of directors that are volunteers.
Yes.
And who are elected by the members, and tell us who some of the officers are these days.
Yes. Well, I'd like to first start by saying that the YWCA has a very diverse board, and we're very deliberate about that. And we try to have a diversity of cultures and races and
Ages
and professions as much as possible. So right now our president is Judy Nolan, who is a retired Unit 4 teacher. We have two vice presidents, Ellen Bullock and Bernice Harrington. Ellen is an attorney here in Champaign-Urbana, and Bernice is with the university. Barbara Ramsey is our treasurer, and
do you have students on the board as well?
Our student leadership, we have a student leadership panel.
I see.
Now, that's
okay.
our student group that handles, they are a registered student organization, and they develop programming for themselves and other students and all, and they do participate in board meetings and that kind of thing. It's kind of hard to get students to come out on a regular basis, as I'm sure you sure. You know. But
they're very busy.
Yes, they yeah. are. Yes, they are. But, yeah, we have in the past have had students on our board, yes. We don't right at this minute.
Before our break, we were talking a little bit about your personal history and how you got involved in being director of the YWCA here on this campus that has such a long and distinguished history going back all the way to 1884.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that when you came to this campus as part of the Project 500, at that time there weren't very many African-American right. students at the university. It was
right.
a very small percentage.
Yes.
One of the big changes has been the growth in the number of African-American students. What do you think has contributed to that growth?
I think a lot of it is that the university itself has, and that the intensity of the effort, I'll say, has maybe waxed and waned through the years. But because of that initial effort to recruit and bring students, African American students, on campus, that is probably the main reason that there are as many as there are right now, and because the chancellors in the past and I'm sure the present chancellor has at least said that that they are still committed to that area, to that effort, I should say, to bring African American students on campus, and so the Office of Minority Student Affairs and some of the other organizations on campus actively recruit and support them once they're here, which is extremely important for African American students.
Sure. Were you a first generation college student in your family?
Yes, I was.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I was.
I was too.
It's a very interesting position.
Uh-huh.
To be in. But my like I said before, my parents were very supportive, and they were very proud of me. At the time, I didn't really realize that.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, mm-hmm. yes, they were.
When you had your three boys going through college, was their experience different than yours?
I think it was. I think their school experience was probably was different from mine. We homeschooled our children for a while, but it was different for them. And I think it was different because of the fact that there were a larger number of African American students on campus, and had been here for a while by the time they were starting your college experience.
Now, growing up in Philadelphia, were you in a segregated school?
No. As a matter of fact, most of the elementary and, at that time, it was junior high, schools that I went to were integrated. They were largely African-American, my elementary school, but I went to a vocational high school, so it was students from all over the city, and it was pretty much 50-50.
And how did you hear about the University of Illinois out in Philadelphia in those days?
As a matter of fact, one of the young women who was on I forget what it was called in the Black Student Group at that time on campus was from Philadelphia. So when they started the 500 project, she came back to Philadelphia specifically and recruited, it was over 70 students from Philadelphia that came here as part of that project.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh. What do you think are the challenges for eliminating racism now in 2006 in this country?
Well, I think part of the problem is that nobody wants to admit that they harbor any racist thoughts or acts of that kind anymore. It's such a, I guess you could call it political correctness. I don't like that term particularly myself, but I think that to a lot of people's minds that it has been eliminated because there are no laws now that say black people can't go here or use this facility or drink out of that water fountain. So, but as I stated earlier, I think it's more of people's personal opinions or the way their worldview, the way they look at the world nowadays, and which is a lot harder to change, and especially if you can keep yourself isolated and you only stay with your group or the people that agree with you and never have your ideas challenged or never challenge them yourself, then you probably can go through life and never have never experience any enlightenment. Mm-hmm. So, but that's one of the things that we attempt to do with the students is, with our students, is have them come together and work with people of different races, different backgrounds, work out those things, work out those differences, learn that people are people and that those ideas and stereotypes that you might have had about other groups are not necessarily so, but you won't do that if you never put yourself in a position to have those ideas challenged.
We're down to about our last 10 minutes of this program. Let me repeat the phone numbers one more time for a couple folks who'd like to get in with questions or comments or share experiences. Anywhere the program is heard, including on the Internet, if you're listening at WILL.UIUC.edu to this program, you may call us at 1-800-222-9455. That's true of anyone outside of the Champaign-Urbana listening area. 1-800-222-WILL. In Champaign-Urbana, there are several local lines you can tap into by punching in 333-9455. Alicia, we've not talked about the World YWCA, and it is an international movement.
Yes.
You and I have been reminded recently of that because Rachel Dekus, who was program director at the YWCA and recently has been at the director of development at the YMCA, was just given a tremendous honor by the World YWCA. Tell our listeners about that.
Okay. Well, Rachel was chosen by the World YWCA to be one of three interns at the World YWCA in Geneva with the United Nations Commission on Human Rights, which I believe her focus is going to be on women's rights and women's issues while there. And Rachel was one of the first women from the United States to be chosen in quite some time. As a matter of fact, they haven't chosen an American, I believe, maybe 10 years,
really?
Something like that. It's been a long time. So because
and she's the only American woman chosen for this time.
Yes, right. Yes. And she was promoted by we're a part of a regional. The YW is broken up into regions, and our regional group, which is called the Great Lakes Alliance, she was, yes, supported by them and encouraged us to do this, and we were so pleased to hear that she was chosen. We're very proud of Rachel. She's a prime example of what the YWCA is trying to help young women develop their abilities to advocate for themselves and for other women. And she's just been a real asset to our organization. And so we're just really proud of her to be representing us in Geneva.
She'll be in Geneva, Switzerland
for about six weeks
yeah. And a total of 8 weeks in
eight
terms
weeks,
of preparation.
Right.
And so it's a great opportunity for her, but also quite an honor for the YWCA
yes,
for her to be selected.
Yes. Very much
and
so.
Working on human rights is something that she's been very much concerned about throughout her career.
Yes.
I know as an undergraduate student here at the University of Illinois, she helped develop the campus ACLU.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And she was active in several Y programs.
Yes. Yes.
As a student. And then she worked in Chicago.
Right, with the Coalition for the Abolition of the Death Penalty.
Of the Death Penalty, that's right.
Yes. Yes.
So she has quite a bit of experience in terms of human rights issues that
yes.
she'll be taking to Geneva, Switzerland.
Yes, I know she'll do a wonderful job, and we're really looking forward to her coming back and telling us all about her experiences and sharing all
learned.
Those things, yes, with our students and with the community as a whole.
When we were talking earlier about your own background in relation to the Y and the kind of experiences you bring to this position, helping young women become empowered, you talked about your church experience as one of those factors, but Christian churches are still terribly segregated racially. Is
mm-hmm.
is that a problem in your perspective?
I think it is a problem because, like I said before, I think part of the ways of tearing down those barriers and helping people to be enlightened and to come out of their stereotypical ideas of the other is through interaction and through living and working and sharing together, and so I think that I think it is kind of sad that we are so segregated in on Sunday morning, as I believe it was Martin Luther King said, the most segregated hour in the United
week,
States.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think we do need to make an effort to not do that, to come out of it, even if it's just to go visit maybe another congregation on your own at some other time, from your regular Sunday routine.
Your mention of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., although points out that the Black church has been a real launching pad for Black men and Black women to find a base, a power base,
mm-hmm.
and a way to develop and impact the whole country and the whole world. So although it's a largely racially segregated institution, there's been great power there as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where organizations like the YW come in, because the young women that are a part of our program, just like anybody else, you grow up in a certain situation and you might belong to a certain church or denomination because your parents did or that's what your family is used to. But when you come to this campus you come to that point in your life where you're looking at the world outside of the where you grew up, then those are the kinds of people that, when they come to us, that we can offer them a different experience, a more colorful experience, you might even say. But just dealing with people outside of your normal sphere of influence can be transforming. And that's what we hope to do. We hope to give them that opportunity. It's not something you can shove down people's throats, but if you take that step, which we understand that the young women that come to us that's what they're looking for. They're looking to take that step. They're looking to try something different from their normal, the way they grew up. So we want to give them the opportunity to do those kinds of things and to have those experiences. And they're not all positive, but they are experiences that can help them grow and change for the better.
Now, when white students who come from perhaps the suburbs of Chicago, which are largely white, come to this university, and they might be interested in YWCA, some of its programs. Are they shocked to discover that white racism is real?
I think some of them are, because nobody wants to think of themselves or the people that they love or care about as being a negative. So in a lot of ways, I think they are. But like I said, I think the students that come to us have a certain mindset, maybe, or a certain curiousness about the world and want to see what else is out there that they know already, that there is something other than the life that they've lived, and other people's experiences might have just as much validity. So they're already curious.
We're down to our last minute, but what are some of the misconceptions about the YWCA? You don't have a gym.
We don't have a pool.
You don't have a fitness center.
Right. And those are the major ones right there. We don't do child care, but because we are a student YW, our emphasis is on student leadership, on student development. And so we get a lot of calls for the when our gym is open, but our focus is somewhere else. But you know, if you remember what you were like when you were a young person needing some guidance and some mentoring and help, then you can do that for somebody else. You can become involved with the YWCA and help a young woman to find her feet, to find her place in this world.
And let's, again, at the end of the program, repeat what we said earlier. Membership is a $35 contribution.
Basic membership.
And you need members to help support your program and also other people who can perhaps give more.
Yes.
People who would like to give may donate to the YWCA at the University of Illinois and mail a check to this charity, 501c3 organization, where the contribution is tax deductible. The address is 1001 South Wright Street, Champaign, Illinois, 61820. We've been talking with the executive director, Lisha Banks. Lisha is spelled?
L-I-S-H-A.
My name is Steve Shoemaker, and I'm the director of the YMCA, and we're happy to share space on the university campus with the YW. As you drive by Chalmers and Wright, you'll see all eight letters out in front of the building.
The big blue sign.
And do come inside and learn about the programs. On Keeping the Faith next week, we'll be talking with Hassan Jabbar about the life of the Prophet Muhammad. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Tonight at 7 on To the Best of Our Knowledge. Ever want to chuck everything and just live your dream? Meet several people who are doing just that. One is a hot young actor starring in a smash Broadway musical. Another is a middle-aged husband and father who published a small magazine and contentedly lives and works in a hole in the ground. Also a guy who just can't get enough of poisonous snakes. That's To the Best of Our Knowledge coming up an hour from now here on AM 580. Today's broadcast is made possible in part by 10,000 Villages. 10,000 Villages' 14th annual showcase of Fair Trade Oriental Rugs will be held March 8th through 11th at their store, 105 North Walnut in downtown Champaign. On Thursday, March 9th at 7 p.m., an informational seminar about Oriental Rugs will be held at the store. For more information, call 352-8200. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, cloudy with a chance of light rain or light snow this evening. The low in the upper 20s with southwest winds around 10 miles per hour, becoming northwest after midnight. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a high in the mid-40s and northwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with the low in the mid-20s and north winds around 10 miles per hour. This is WILL Urbana, listener-supported public radio. This American Life is next. It's 6 p.m.